Hi, I'm Kaylee Kayanoa, and you're listening to Think Ahead on the Evergreen Exchange. We're trying a more concise interview format today, so let us know what you think by emailing us at info@evergreengovcal.com. During the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, we heard the phrase unprecedented times repeatedly until it became somewhat of a cliche. Using the word unprecedented over and over started to make me wonder if we're living in a time where one should just always expect the unexpected. When clients ask me where exactly I think the market's headed this year, I always respond that if I knew that for sure, I wouldn't need to be sitting at my desk working for a living, because even a well-educated guess often turns out wrong. Take, for example, February of 2022, when Russia invaded the Ukraine. After the plunge and rebound of March 2020, an already expensive market had been on a sharp 21-month tear, still well knowing interest rate hikes were likely on their way. Vladimir Putin was threatening an invasion, and the entire world was calling his bluff, including us in a podcast we published days before the invasion. Russia had far more to lose than to gain, and yet they did wage war, and that conflict would become one of the key factors driving markets that year. We can assess what we think will happen, but that implies that we're even considering all of the possibilities, when so often the events that tip our economy into strength or weakness are so far out of left field, they're at times unimaginable before happening. So we have to take stock of what is, not what we expect or what logically should be, and then adapt to that. We have a saying internally at Evergreen that our job is not to predict, but it's to react. I asked one of my most trusted colleagues, Jeff Dix, about some of the big themes on the forefront of investors' minds this year. Jeff is a CFA and co-CIO at Evergreen.
That is somewhat of a loaded question. There's a lot of things we look at heading into 2024. One metric that I think is really important this year to keep a track of is inflation. CPI peaked at just over 9% back in 2022 and has moved down to just over 3%, depending on the metric you track. Since inflation peaked in 2022 from the low in the stock market that year, the S&P has rallied over 40%. Lower inflation has allowed the Fed to pause raising interest rates and even discuss the possibility of cutting rates. It's also stabilized the bond market and borrowing costs. I think if you look at inflation this year, it's one of the big risks to the market. If inflation were to reignite, the Fed would not be able to cut rates. Rates would also move up in the bond market. And I think that would be really challenging for financial markets. Just this past week, January CPI came out, as well as the Fed's preferred PCE measure. And those both moved up in January. So it'll be really critical to monitor how inflation changes throughout the year, and that could have a big impact on financial markets. My personal view is inflation continues to grind lower or stabilizes here, 2-3% range, as opposed to moving back up. But we'll have to watch, and it'll be certainly a big factor for markets this year.
So it sounds like inflation has come down meaningfully, but the jury is still out on whether the trajectory will stick or if maintaining the Fed's target will mean higher for longer. I also asked Jeff how he's looking at stocks in the Magnificent Seven right now.
So the moves we have seen in many cases, or in some cases, look just, really unsustainable. Take NVIDIA. The market cap for NVIDIA is up $1 trillion since December. To put that into perspective, NVIDIA's sales last year were $60 billion. Those sales are expected to grow to $100 billion this year. But in 4 months, the stock has moved up 10 times what the forward sales are expected to be for the stock. And the stock currently trades, around 20 times sales. So it really feels pretty bubbly at the moment in the AI space, but these type of moves, tend to go further than you would expect. And not all of the Mag 7 is as expensive as NVIDIA, but if you take Microsoft at 35 times earnings, you look back to 2012 to 2018, Microsoft traded between 10 and 20 times. So we would just caution, watch position sizes, trim back where appropriate. These stocks are priced today for really significantly positive outcomes. And if there's any sort of hiccup with these companies or the economy, we think there's, pretty significant downside or even the possibility of just re-rating lower in terms of the multiple.
Evergreen's investment philosophy is never to chase returns, but instead to rotate from what looks overvalued to what looks undervalued comparatively. This also means fading in and out of areas of the market rather than going all in or all out based on our outlook. Here's what Jeff had to say about areas of the stock and bond markets that do look attractive right now.
We think it makes sense to continue to rebalance equity portfolios from growth to value, not necessarily exiting growth, but just rejiggering your portfolios back to a more balanced approach. We also think it makes sense to rebalance equity weightings versus bonds. For instance, if your portfolio's target is 50% stocks over the past few years, you moved up to 60%. We think it's wise to bring that down to 50%, which will provide, if the market corrects, it'll provide the ability to buy in and sell out. On the bond side, we're closely watching credit spreads, the difference between corporate bond yields and treasury yields. Spreads, especially on high yield, are near the tightest level we've seen over the past 20 years. These periods tend to be really good opportunities to lighten up on low quality bonds and gear the portfolio to higher quality debt. So we've been doing that here at Evergreen pretty aggressively. The good news is you can still get 4 to 5% yields on treasuries depending on the term. Investment grade corporate bonds pay 5 to 6%. We like cash as well that pays 5%, which offers a good rate of return as well as being, a source for future buying when the market does turn the other direction.
Our team's senior analyst, Gearman Howell, published a chart book in May of last year weighing the odds of a U.S. recession over the next 12 months. In that, he examined both sides of the debate surrounding whether the U.S. is headed towards a recession. And in 16 charts, he showed just how conflicting many of the data points were and helped explain why the Fed's Todd Barkin described it as, and I'll quote this, the most predicted potential recession in memory. I'll quote exactly what Gearman said in the chart book as well. He said, ultimately, while we believe the U.S. will slip into a recession in the next 12 months, we think it'll be shallow and that we will avoid a deep, prolonged downturn. And today, co-CIO Jeff Dix admits that while recession risks remain a key question, they've certainly receded in the U.S. This, of course, depends heavily on continued labor market strength. If that were to change, our recession view would change significantly as well. This conversation is also certainly not meant to be an exhaustive list of current risks on top of inflation, an overvalued equity market, and the fact that we're not fully in the clear on a significant recession. There are also geopolitical risks, effects from tight monetary policy, and of course the election, all of which could threaten the current rally we've seen. One lesser discussed but widely known issue that may come to a head sooner than later is the rising federal debt. Experts have been sounding the alarm on this for many years, and yet the general population, while admitting it's true, treats the alarm like noise. With higher interest rates, the cost of servicing this debt has nearly doubled. In a recent Chartbook webinar, Jeff Dix comments, among the obvious problems with our country's fiscal issues, the productivity of U.S. capital is majorly hindered by this burden with where debt and interest rates are at right now. I asked Jeff how significant of a theme he thinks the deficit will be for markets in the economy this year.
Here's the thing. I'm not so sure this will be a major negative for markets in 2024. That should certainly not take away from the major threat our debt or deficit deficit are to our economy over the intermediate or even longer term. Now, I think with the election, there'll be significant more coverage on the size of our deficit, our nation's debt, kind of the unsustainable path we've taken over the last few years. So it will be more in the news. Total government debt today stands just over $34 trillion. Tax revenue is running around $4.6 trillion. So if you think about debt at 7.4 times revenue, that's a pretty substantial number. GDP is running close to $28 trillion, which would be 1.2 debt to GDP ratio, which is a level that, is unsustainably high, I'd say, and really at a point where you really need to start to make significant changes. I will say debt to GDP did peak around that level after World War II. Over the next decade, our country was able to reduce that ratio to 50%, over the next two decades, the U.S. was able to reduce the debt to GDP back down to 50%. So it is possible to reverse course when debt to GDP gets this high. Over that period, post-World War II, there was a widespread consensus in our country for the for budget restraint, debt reduction. The government began to report sizable surpluses. Economic growth was also strong back then, aided by the baby boom, as well as there was also quite a bit of pent-up demand from the war times and depression. So these tailwinds during the 1940s may be challenging to come by today, given the demographics we're seeing today versus back then. So it's even more important to tackle this issue today rather than down the road. Government spending's running around $6.5 trillion, and relative to tax revenue mentioned above at $4.6 trillion, that equates to a $1.9 trillion deficit, or 5.5% of GDP. This is pretty simple math, but we're spending far more than we are taking in, which, of course, leads to increasingly larger debt balances. These problems are not going to be easy to fix. At the end of the day, we need to reduce spending relative to revenues. The biggest budget items are Medicare and Medicaid, Social Security, defense spending, interest on debt. On the latter, interest on debt, that's unfortunately going up at one of the most rapid rates we have ever seen. So this will take a coordinated effort by both sides. There's going to need to be concession by everyone. And we're going to, quite frankly, need to get creative with ensuring that, you know, entitlement spending, you know, is put on a sustainable path, not just for people retiring today, but people retiring over the next 20 years, 50 years, 100 years. And back to your question for 2024, all these numbers, ratios, and problems are very slow moving. So while it might not be a major impact this year, and it could be, the longer we wait to address, the more challenging this is going to be for our economy.
I've been getting more and more questions recently about momentum strategies and how we view upward and downward trends. Evergreen tends to take more of a contrarian approach and seeks pockets of value without trying to perfectly time the market. The strategy requires discipline and patience. On the other hand, I once had a client tell me that he became a better investor when he learned to stop confusing inevitability with imminence, which is also a necessary skill in this approach. I asked Jeff to explain how our portfolio management team balances those things, aiming to protect clients from the threats of tomorrow while still investing for today.
Financial markets, in many ways, act like a pendulum. You get periods of excessive optimism, followed by periods of excessive pessimism. I think oftentimes when the threats of tomorrow are prevalent narratives in the media and drive markets lower, these themes oftentimes get priced into the market or overly priced in. And when you have this negative sentiment, it tends to be really good buying opportunities. At Evergreen, we tend to get the most aggressive on the buy side when sentiment readings are extremely bearish. Whether you look at investor bull bear readings, fund flows, the VIX index, the fear and greed index, when these indicators are flashing red or pessimistic, historically, it's almost always a good time to add risk to one's portfolio. The best opportunities are when all of these are flashing red at the same time. Valuation is also really important and fundamental analysis on the company level. Even if the overall market is expensive or the economy is slowing, there will be pockets of value on the sector level or on the individual stock side. On the other hand, when the VIX is low, sentiment is bullish, markets are overbought, those setups often mean most of the good news is priced in. That doesn't mean to necessarily sell all your stocks, but not typically a great time to increase risks. Perhaps just as important in terms of how we protect clients is managing our clients through these cycles. You know, investing is emotional. When the markets are going down, it's human nature to want to sell and preserve the value of your account. And that tends to be when we get most aggressive in terms of adding risk to our client portfolios. Another way we protect clients is doing our best to avoid bubbles. Our aim is not to get caught up in the hype, chase extremely expensive areas of the market, chase overbought areas of the market, you know, at Evergreen, we're okay missing a bit of the upside so we can protect our clients' capital. And when markets do crack, our goal is to always take advantage of the great opportunities that are provided when most everyone else is selling.
Evergreen's two co-CIOs are of the same mind in this regard. Next, I talked to David Hay about keeping emotions at bay as an investor. For me as a wealth consultant, I'm in the role of encouraging people to keep emotions in check with their money. It doesn't mean removing emotions entirely. They play an important role. But it does mean identifying and preventing emotional thinking from sabotaging investment returns. I asked Dave if he had anything to add to the conversation, especially seeing as it's an election year.
I think anytime you let your emotions dictate your investment decision-making process, it's not a good idea. And emotions, I should say politics, are very emotional. Money's very emotional. And it's, you know, maybe that's part of the problem is that, you know, humans are basically kind of, they oscillate between being in a fearful mode and a greedy mode. And Warren Buffett is always saying you want to be greedy when others are fearful and fearful when others are greedy. I don't think that's how most people behave. And I think the market history is pretty clear that's the case. People tend to be greedy when others are greedy and fearful when others are fearful. So these emotions tend to feed on themselves and really get out of control. And I think that's why we've seen over the course of the years, but especially, say, over the last 25 years, so many bubbles and busts, because greed has become, I think, even more, it goes viral to a greater degree. And maybe it's because everybody's so connected now, you know, with all our digital devices. And so we can have, you know, basically bank runs, in this case, market runs on the market when people get scared. And then you get a period like this where, at least in the market, everybody's optimistic. And so that just keeps driving itself. And right now it's just pretty stunning with cryptos in particular, Bitcoin just going absolutely nuts. But looking at option activity and one day to expiration or even same day expiration, so these very, very short-term options, which are highly speculative, trading activities off the charts, lots of indications that speculation is once again getting out of control. And we had that back in 2021, and it's amazing how many investors kind of have amnesia over what occurred in 2022 when the NASDAQ went down 35%. And you may remember that I was calling the particular cohort in the market that I was most worried about in 2021, the COPS, which stood for the crazy overpriced stocks. And in 2022, they got absolutely busted. Many of them were down 70 to 80% or even 90%. Some of those have come roaring back, but many of them look to have very questionable fundamentals. So I think we're very much back in a speculative period where the greed is in control, and it's just a matter of time before fear takes over. And I think what's really amazing is most Americans are very uncomfortable with the future for the country. And we got, according to some brilliant people like Neil Howe, the famed historian demographer, half of Americans worried about a civil war. And yet the stock market's acting like we're back in the late 90s when there really were great economic conditions and when the federal government was running surpluses. And Alan Greenspan was worried we were going to pay off all our national debt over the next 10 years and not have a treasury bond market. And now we're running these deficits that are unprecedented in good times.
We sit in an interesting seat as advisors, with half our clients asking how we're going to protect portfolios from the potential victory of candidate A, and the other half asking the same question, but about candidate B. Dave started in the financial industry in the 1970s, so he's followed and witnessed the implications to financial markets of many presidents. He told me how significant or insignificant he's seen those administrations be for markets.
Yes, I think this is a very interesting election, definitely different than any that we've seen before. This will be my ninth, going back to when Jimmy Carter was in the White House. And actually, that was a pretty interesting election, too, because even though Jimmy Carter really doesn't get a lot of credit for it, it was him that actually selected Paul Volcker to be head of the Fed and stuck with him against a lot of advice from his political advisors, who said, as it turned out correctly, that if he let Volcker do what he wanted to do, that he probably wouldn't be reelected. Jimmy Carter would lose to Ronald Reagan, which he did do. But Volcker, of course, did beat inflation. And so I think Jimmy Carter does get a lot of credit for that. So I think his election in 1976 was probably a lot more significant than many of us would believe. But I will say that I think Reagan really set the stage for the boom of the 1980s. I mean, certainly having inflation kind of come down, it was a big help. And interest rates, you're too young to remember this. Most people who are too young listen to this to remember. But in the early 80s, get the prime rate over 20%, and long-term treasury rates were kind of in the 15% range. And so interest rates were incredibly high, which was sucking the life out of the economy, and then the interest rates came down drastically, and we were off to the races. So that election was big. I think Obama's election was big in 2008, that he was able to do some things in terms of shoring up the financial system during the global financial crisis and the so-called Great Recession. You know, they both were together at the same time. And he did some things that I think would have been hard for a Republican to do, that would have been viewed very negatively in terms of bailing out Wall Street. But Wall Street did need to be bailed out to prevent the system from collapsing, and the government actually made up a lot of money, which is ignored from the big Wall Street bailouts. The taxpayers made hundreds of millions of dollars off that. Anyway, so that was a big election. I think this one will be too, and this is a very unusual one because we've had two very unpopular elections back-to-back, 2016 and 2020, and this one is probably going to be the most unpopular of all. I mean, the polls are pretty clear that 60 to 70% of Americans don't want to vote for either one of the leading candidates, and it looks almost certain to be Biden versus Trump.
This podcast is being released with the benefit of hindsight on the primaries, and as Dave speculated earlier last week, the candidates are Trump and Biden. Before recording, I asked Dave to be careful not to offend either side, as we have clients of varying political affiliations. He told me the best he could do was to offend both sides equally, which seemed like a reasonable compromise.
I think there's a belief that Republicans are more pro-business and Democrats are more anti-business, but the stock market doesn't reflect that. So I think that has an awful lot to do with it, is really where are you in the market cycle, and the president can affect that, but it's not, I definitely don't think you should be selling stocks because you're afraid that a certain party's going to win.
While politics are important to the economy, I resist giving in to exuberance or fear-mongering about what precisely any one president will mean for financial markets. We will know how this year is going to play out once it's over. But in the meantime, our team's advice is to make sure you're taking advantage of the opportunities that do exist and not obsessing about the unlimited variety of opportunities and threats that may present themselves at some future point in time. Today is a time to be actively managing fixed income and not hanging out in money markets or laddering up bonds. If you're working with Evergreen, it's likely that this is already happening in your portfolio. If you aren't working with Evergreen, reach out for a second opinion on your income allocation, as it's a big chunk of the portfolio that too often gets very little thought or intention put into its construction. On the equity side, pick stocks carefully and invest in companies with strong fundamentals, durable competitive advantages, and good management teams. Don't just sit in what's done well. Our research team spends thousands of hours a year cumulatively evaluating companies. So be honest with yourself, too, about whether you have the interest, time, and expertise to pick stocks in a more challenging environment. Thank you for listening to the Evergreen Exchange, and I hope you'll be back for future episodes. This material has been prepared or is distributed solely for informational purposes only and is not a solicitation or an offer to buy any security or instrument or to participate in any trading strategy. Any opinions, recommendations, and assumptions included in this piece are based upon current market conditions, reflect the personal opinions of the featured guest, and do not necessarily reflect the views of Evergreen's Investment Committee as a whole. Investment decisions for Evergreen clients are made by the Evergreen Investment Committee. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All investments involve risk of loss, including the loss of principal. Securities highlighted or discussed in this piece have been selected based on current events and/or relevant topics and are not intended to represent Evergreen's performance or be an indicator for how Evergreen has performed or may perform in the future. Each security discussed has been selected solely for this purpose and has not been selected based on performance or any performance-related criteria. Evergreen's portfolios are actively managed, and securities discussed in this piece may or may not be held in such portfolios at any given time.